November 1, 2021, it's Watt from Pedro Show. Show started off
right back at you.
Happy 1st of November, actually, and Day of the Dead, huh? And by October, you could tell I ain't man alone because you might be hearing some other voice. But we start off the show with John Coltrane, this Live in Seattle thing that just came out last week.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I've been meaning to hear it. I was like, wow, this is like great news that this thing's come out with Pharaoh on it and everything.
Right.
Have you been listening to it quite a bit, or you at least heard it?
I'll get to it in just a sec. Interlude number 3, which there's 4 interludes. You know, Love Supreme has 4 parts to it, and they have these things they call interludes.
Right.
I don't know why, because the original recording just had the 4 parts, and like the interludes are like the bass solos, the drum solos, Jimmy Garrison, Elvin Jones. They're joined by another bass player, Donald Garrett. I wonder if he even knew the piece, you know, because it only had been out a year or something. And after that, we had Bill McKay with Aster, which probably could tell I'm not man alone because of those Estonian software engineers, their Skype invention. I got Bill McKay from Chicago, right?
Yeah, well, I've been here like 20 years with my wife, but we're both from Pittsburgh originally. You know, we've rambled around, you know, Boston and Portland, Oregon, and Denver and stuff. But yeah, we've been here like 20 years. So
you're asking about this 1965 October 2nd recording of Love Supreme at the Penthouse in Seattle, Washington.
Exactly.
77 minutes. Right, 34 minutes longer than the original. I got it in the mail a week ago, wow. Friday, and I played it 15 times straight through, so about 18 hours. Now, some of those I was caught, of course, because I'm not Superman. Anyway, it is beautiful. It's a trippy thing. And then great, also the little book with Lewis Porter, who wrote, you know, a great bio on him, and is also part of the John Coltrane reference book. Big thing with all his gigs and sessions. But I want to get into your journey through music now. We got to give Stevie Bono credit for the connect. Thank you, Brother Stevie. Bill, please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Earliest musical recollection. Let's see. I think one of the earliest ones that I remember right off the bat, they're conflicting, but around certain years. But I remember going to see, it was my dad playing trumpet around the house, I would say. That's probably the first thing. And then, you know, followed by going to a reunion of his, like his college reunion, his law school or something, and being quite little still. And, you know, hearing like the Got to Get You Into My Life, like Beatles in a bar that we stopped at for a beer. And then, so there's a few of those. You know, those things, like he was a big jazz guy. So we went to see Stan Kenton, who he liked that orchestra a lot. And we went to see them when I was, you know, probably 8 or something, 6 or 8. And,
one of your first gigs saw, right?
What's that?
Stan Kenton was probably the first live music you saw.
It was one of the early ones. Yeah.
Your pop was a musician, but you said mm-hmm. something about law too, so maybe more of a amateur musician, or was he professional?
Yeah, he was more of like a major music fan and like an amateur. Yeah, he had at one point taken lessons. I think early on he had some aspirations to play jazz and stuff, but he had more of a classical tone because I guess he had studied with the principal trumpeter of the Cleveland Orchestra where he was from, and so he never quite acquired like a jazz sound. He was, you know, he and my mom both, actually, to give them both credit, were always like 100% behind, you know, my aspirations, you know, musically and artistically. So.
Yeah, but you didn't end up on trumpet. But there was a trumpet at the pad. Was there other instruments where you grew up?
There was a piano in the house for a while. And then, you know, my brother picked up the trumpet, too. And my mom did some singing and stuff. But, yeah, it was, you know, I quickly became the main instrument holder.
Did you jump on that piano? Did you jump on that fucking trumpet?
I didn't jump on the trumpet. I think I tried, you know. Yeah. I couldn't get much out of it because, you know, with the embouchure and stuff, it's tough as a youngster, but the piano for sure, and you know, just picking out things here and there. And I'm an okay pianist. You know, I think it's a great instrument for writing stuff.
Some people it almost chased them away from music, but the ordeal of the piano lessons. Did you have that?
No, not at all. No, and the guitar lessons. I actually begged my parents to get me the guitar lessons.
Oh, you did have lessons. Well, Here, before we get to the guitar, let me ask you about school. Were you in the marching band or the choir or shit like that?
Oh, man. You know what? A little bit. Like the it was actually a little bit of band, but at that time, I think they kind of accepted me in because I was a musician, but the band leader, I didn't really get along with him, and he didn't make any place for the guitar. So it was mostly weird, like a weird homeroom for me and this band, this orchestra, like, would play, you know? Like it was.
And you weren't allowed to play with them.
I was like, I played on a couple things, but that was it, you know? So I didn't, you know, I don't even think they had an amp there. And as a kid, you know, you can't be getting an amp on the bus and all that.
Well, fuck, so, when I was in school, there was no guitars in the band. So
right?
It was all reeds and horns. The drummers didn't play trap sets, right? They had a little triangle and snare drum, maybe, or timpani. But, you know, things evolve. Other guests I've had on the show, they had full-on fucking jazz bands and rock bands. That's why I ask these questions, you know, because it's always different.
Oh, yeah.
Let me ask you this, Bill. First record you bought with your own money.
Oh, man, first record I bought with my own money. That's a great question. I'm trying to think.
Well, you know, when you're a kid, you ain't got a lot of money, so it's trippy. What would you spend your money on?
So I think, again, I don't mean to give these answers to questions, but then again, why not? I think one was probably Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band Beatles, and then there was one where me and my friends were at the mall in Rochester, New York, where I lived too, growing up, and Pittsburgh later, and Pittsburgh before. But there was remember we had enough money to scrape together. It was that thing of being three kids together, and we just wanted to buy a record. Like, we wouldn't want to leave the mall without something. And so we pooled our money, and I think it was like $2.93 or whatever, and got this very strange, it was like a very early double record by Alice Cooper. I don't know. I've never looked it up again, but, you know, we just were going to share it.
It might have been his first two releases that Frank Zappa produced. Yeah, Pretty's For You and Easy Action. I know they were packaged together because his breakthrough album was actually the third one. I think Frank Zappa treated him kind of like Joke Band or something. And then Bob Ezrin, more of a rock and roll, you know, producer, made rock and roll. He's the guy who did Kiss, Destroyer, and Lou Reed, Berlin, and stuff like
Berlin.
That.
Oh, and The Wall, too? Yeah. He's amazing.
Yeah, I guess he was part of that also. I don't know so much about it. I stopped listening to Pink Floyd after Animals.
Yeah.
I saw that tour, though. That was a trip. I remember me and my buddy Tone was at Anaheim Stadium, and we could see each of them come in their own big stretch limousine. You know, way up at the top, right? Way up at the top. And we could see this in them. Yeah. My buddy Tony had binoculars, so we could see that they were wearing black T-shirts, kind of.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we know about your first gig because your pop went and took you to see Stan Kenton, who I think at the time had the loudest jazz band. That was one of their claims. Yeah, they were SoCal, I think Orange County here, and they would play Catalina a lot, a place they called the casino. It wasn't gambling, but it was a round building. It's there, the only town Avalon. Let me ask you this.
That's a trip.
How did you get on the guitar?
Man, I think what happened was actually I was getting into, I remember, you know, hearing, going to, how you do, go to hear friends and older friends, you know, and brothers of friends playing and sisters of friends playing records. And I was, you know, getting entranced with like Kiss and stuff like that. But also like, you know, all this classical music at home and jazz and other stuff. But the guitar, you know, I was like, man, look at this guy. He's a spaceman with a Les Paul. Like, where do you sign on for that? And so I got into the guitar from that, and it was a really funny situation because I had the woman who sold the guitar. I think it wasn't a Sears guitar, but it might have been at Sears. It was like a department store, and I was nine, so I think this was about 77 when you were at the Animal Show. And I got the guitar, and the woman who sold it to my mom, I think I begged her to get it for about 3 weeks or so, 4 weeks. And she's like, okay, we'll get you something. It was like $20, this little Sunburst acoustic. And the woman who sold it to us said, hey, if you need lessons, my husband teaches. This guy is, I remember him as Mr. Clark. And so he was my first teacher. And so, yeah, it just started out from
there.
What
kind of stuff did he teach you?
You know, it was very rudimentary, Mike. It was mostly, you know, I think he felt you should learn to read. So that was good, actually, you know, the notation. So it was sort of from very rudimentary books. But I would also sneak in a few tunes, kind of like I hear everybody I know teaches now. You know, everybody gives them a record and wants them to learn this thing.
Right, right. Teach me the song, please.
Yeah, yeah. So I didn't do that too much. But I probably made him laugh or puzzled or something because I remember I gave him the rock and roll, Led Zeppelin rock and roll from The Song Remains the Same. So it was the live version. And
you know the Volume 4 one? I just read this. That's a coincidence you mentioned that song.
Yeah.
The one off the Volume 4 of the Studios.
Yeah.
It's got fucking Ian Stewart, the Rolling Stone piano man that the first manager wouldn't let on stage.
Oh, really?
You know, they had a cat. He said he was too old or some shit.
That's right. I remember that.
Because this guy could play his heart out, man. He was a beautiful player. And he's the guy who's playing the piano on that. Been a long time.
Yeah.
Okay, look, you gave me this song here, Pre-California. So I want to play that.
Oh, sweet.
cake? There is no cake.
the beast. Beware the beast with the giant claw, a monster from a world unknown. Unknown and unexplored. Why did they let it go? The monster claw. A monster with a giant hand. A giant hand with a giant claw. The dreaded giant claw. The dangerous, deadly, demonic, dreaded giant claw. One scratch could take your head off. And you'd be walking around with a severed head. One scratch. That's all it would take. You'd be walking around without no head. You'd look stupid without a head. That's not just me saying that. Ask anyone.
mountains tattered of snow. If I can walk, then I'll have to crawl and be late for your funeral again. Through the snow I saw a hearse pass by. I ran out as it neared the end. The driver turned his ashen face away. I'd be late for your funeral again.
Start off that Chuck music, Bill McKay. God, you know you spell your name the same as Brother Steve, the sax man from Stooges. I got to help him for 125 months. Pre-California, yeah. Bill McKay. Then we had Fifth Symphony Invocation to Trigger, the Eruption of the Yellowstone Caldera. Less than first movement. This is from the ritual, and it's called Red Ritual Cleansing, the Sentimental Fence Post Ocursitra, hard to pronounce. SLWCC Watt after that, my collab with Sam Lockward, Iowa City, Cake. And then I found music a week from Friday. Me and my missing men are going to play the Unhinged Festival in Denton, Texas. So I saw bands on the poster that we're going to share the stage with, and we found music, and so here it is. Wayne's Dover and the Dots, the Maze. The Violet Squid with Speakers Tickling, Sailor Poon, Be Nice, Drug Mountain, Mind Your Fingers, Jad Fair, Ask Anyone. Interesting. There's a band, too, called Terminator 3, but I could only find something called Terminator 2, so I don't know if that's the same band. Maybe they added a dude. Then Big Boys from the old days, Austin, Texas. Us and the Minutemen and Big Boys like to do funk. We got the idea from a pop group in England. Fun, fun, fun. My Daddy Ate My Eyes after that, E is for Ecstasy. And finally, Fate. No, Late for Your Funeral Again, Bill McKay. Naked Balls. Okay, let's continue on. Now, so you're taking Mr. Clark's giving you lessons here and stuff, and some of it's, you know, the traditional stuff, and some of it's, teach me a song. But what about after school, not graduate, but afternoon? The garage band, basement band, bedroom band. Did you do that stuff with your buddies from school?
Later, and it was a little bit, even before then, I was going to say, I had gotten electric guitar pretty soon after, you know, even just within a year or two. So I was learning tunes quickly because I have that kind of ear, I guess. And I started to play these solo electric kind of concerts, you know, at my brother parties and stuff like that. So it was a funny thing. But then, yeah, later on, and that was just a range of all kinds of stuff, even some originals, really early things I was just playing with. And then later on, yeah, a few of the high school type bands and stuff. And I was just talking with someone about this the other day because I hadn't thought of it before, but how weird those bands were where there was, you know, like it was all covers, but the covers made no particular sense together. You know what I'm saying? Like the cohesion. Right.
Here's the ska song. Here's the hard rock song. Like, here's the reggae song.
It's great. Yeah, we do like.
But you know what? Yeah. In a way, look, you're just finding out about it. And at least, you know, you're trying out these different things. Because at the end of the day, right, music is music. But exactly. Yeah, because part of the tribal bonding somehow is this fucked up notion of genre and shit.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's kind of is really beautiful because you do just sort of, you know, you probably learn more that way by trying that thing, and because it ends up being pretty much everything people just agreed was like, okay, that's cool enough, we can do that, like no objections, right?
Right. You
know, it's like somebody's favorites and then maybe everybody likes some of it.
Well, like, but you said Led Zeppelin or Kiss, I mean, there's some common denominators. I'm curious though, when did you start writing your own material, your own compositions?
Man, well, I think, Mike, that I might have even started
parties for your brother?
Yeah, in essence, really early, almost, you know, I was playing at age 9, so I'd say by even when I was 10 or 11, I had this thing called, it was called The Thing, and I wish I remembered it. It was sort of a stitched together, you know, like set one of those 17-part things, like every little bit that you've figured out, you know, of your own, and quite fun to play it, you know. It was several minutes long, or took 6 minutes or something. It was like a mini little epic.
Right.
Yeah, so that was one of the first things. And then I think I was always, you know, stuff was always kind of pouring out in this and that way. But I didn't, you know, really have, it was a little bit of like a, I was mostly, you know, playing in people's bands and stuff, friends' bands, you know, more than like leading my own band for quite a while.
Helping other cats out, your friends out, and taking direction instead of you being the rudder band.
Totally, and trying to develop myself and figure out where I was going. And I think it was when I was about 25 when I hit Portland. That was about 93, I think, that I was like, you know, I was doing a lot of writing, but really, again, I just sort of throwing it all on 4-tracks and all that kind of stuff. It's still like a bit of a gold mine that I dive into, but from time to time, and pull stuff out. But I was playing in a trio, which was very fun, with a friend named Alex Lilly, and we were doing a good number of originals, and it also had this kind of blues punk spy music kind of thing. You know, it was like a rockabilly in there too, two guitars and drums. So that was, we started, you know, that was when I was playing
bass.
Live stuff. Yeah, no bass. I know. What the
that
hell?
That poor lonely kick drum.
We couldn't find you.
Lonely kick drum. But you're talking Portland, which ain't too far from fucking Olympia. And I know those Riot Girls, Slater Kinneys, they picked up from the Flat Duo Jets, right?
Right, the Flat Duo
Dexter
Jets.
And I think the drummer's name was Crow, right?
I remember, well, I don't know the names, but I remember them from that Athens movie.
No,
right?
I play gigs. Minutemen Firehose played with Flat Duo Jet. I think I think he's a Raleigh cat or something. Somewhere in North Carolina. Because his sister was a drummer. We lost her to cancer, but she Let's Active with Mitch Easter and that shit.
Yeah, what did you just say?
Let's Active. She was the drummer. Dexter, the guitar man from Flat Duo Jet's sister.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was but yeah, so like you're saying, there was a background of stuff, right, of people in that area, which is a weird area without bass, but if you get the guitars sad, if you get them low enough or something, and we didn't really down tune, but you know, frequency wise.
I always the excuse that I always get is like, "Oh, there's more room in the van." Okay.
More room? Like sonic room?
No, in the band. Like, you don't have the big fucking bass hit. You don't have the bass player.
More room in the band.
I know. Is that a bullshit reason?
That's silly. Yeah.
Look, we're at the end of the first hour, Bill.
Right. I think they're
November 1, 2021 edition. Watt Pedro Show. Special guest, Bill McKay. Hold tight for hour two.
So
November 1, 2021, it's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
Indian winter, spring, host of forgotten things, summer drew you inside. Wilderness born lodging in a place not your own, mistaking sea for home. Ma, can you tell me please, for I burn up the leaves, strain is my sister on. Can you tell me please, for I burn up the leaves, which chain is my killer on?
for Pedro show. We start off the second hour. Bill McKay, Birds of May, even though we're just starting November. Use your imagination, people. Then Tevik, Friederlove, featuring Alien Boy with Pyramid Accord. And then Bill McKay again with Arcadia. Okay, so what was this trio called in Portland?
Yeah, well, that's the trouble, too. No bass and no title, really. No name.
Really?
So I think so one time, you know, we were playing with names, but it was really just the, you know, my guy Alex was also, he has a thing, a long-running thing in Portland still called Riot Cop, a group called, speaking of riot things. He was really like almost even against really playing in regular venues, you know, and I was just doing that and doing other stuff on my own. So I was like, great, we'll play parties. And it was real, you know, it was a great scene. So we never really developed a name. I maybe just called the tapes like, you know, McKay Lilly or something like that, our last names. And they, because the drummer shifted, you know, the drummer was, it was shifting around quite a bit. Yeah. But it was, you know, I'm thinking nowadays I got to get those tapes out, and people are always telling me they're going to degrade if I don't get them onto another format soon.
But, yeah, they'll fall apart and stuff. Yeah, because you didn't send me any of this older stuff, but that's all
right. Yeah, no, I didn't have that access to that. But
how long did you spend in Portland?
I was there 5 years. Yeah, 5 years, Mike. About 93 to 98. And then, you know, both me and my wife, I think, were just feeling like, man, we just want to get somewhere, you know, back to like a bit of a more urban, you know, sensory overload kind of situation. And so a friend had moved to Chicago, and I didn't have a lot of ideas about the city exactly. But my mom had grown up here, and my parents had met here, too. So
did mine. In fact, yeah, I was conceived there. I was born in Virginia, but I was conceived. There was a boot camp. My pop was a sailor.
Yeah? Is that right?
I wouldn't shit you, Bill. So what about musically?
Yeah, like musically when I got here?
Yeah.
Well, that quickly became, I was realizing that was a really good thing, because that wasn't in our minds too, like a place to be, you know, have further creative explorations, you know, with a wider palette of people and situations. And so one thing was that I early on was looking to put together, you know, a more like experimental or rock oriented group again. And I wasn't really, I've said this before, but I wasn't really finding the people, even though there's a huge tradition of that here, of course. I didn't really meeting up with the people that I had a chemistry with. And since I could improvise and had a background in jazz and other stuff too, I was started to gravitate that way, at least at first. And so it was interesting times, you know, because I got into even these jam sessions meeting people, which, you know, a lot of times rock never really has that. Blues.
No, it's ridiculous.
You know, there should be something more like that in a way.
Absolutely. I agree with you, Bill.
You know? Yeah, so.
Because it was some like jive thing to sell. You know, this teenager thing was created in the 50s, right? So they don't have to pay rent. They live at home. Let's sell them rock and roll. So all this kind of weird stuff that didn't have anything to do with music in some ways.
Yeah.
Right. You know, even though rock and roll's got good foundation of music in it, for a while there it was a little bit jive.
Yeah.
Well, some of it was. And probably always will be. Yeah, humans are like this. Remember, more Tutti Frutti sold by Pat Boone than Little Richard.
Exactly.
I asked Little Richard about that, and he said, well, I think his version was for the living room. Mine was for the bedroom.
Great quote.
Yeah. Now, you gave me this. It on. I'm going to play this, okay? Let's try it on.
Sure. So you see, like a forehead, may you be bright, set alight, glimpse I had you lately. It's a life to miss you, inside your shell, tall and blue. Runs grow slow to a crawl. I thought that the worst was behind me now. They stayed strong, though I grew tall. The waters that fall thank you.
التلفزيون العربي السوري نحييكم ونبدأ معكم فترة إرسالنا لهذا اليوم. خير ما نستهل به برامجنا.
We'll be right back. Thank you.
Pedro Show, that chunk of music started off. Bill McKay, Try It On. Then we had something. This cat has got a project called Viz, V-I-Z, and it's seven parts, and this is the first part. A Veil is the whole piece. And this first part is Source. And it's pretty trippy. Mephisto Halaby after that. Watch on the Orient, Part 1. Now, this is the drummer man to the... Who did I have on the last episode? Man, I've been doing five a week, six a week sometimes and since last November. God's got a year now. And so, I space out a little bit. Another friend of Stevie Bono's. Dan Liptock, yeah. This is his drummer man's solo project. Then Head Boggle with Synthy Robot. CLF Suba with Fortnay Sue Boy. Sorry for ruining French language, but this is a project where they're like kind of tribute to that England band TV personality. And then Angel Wings Marmalade with Owl Eyes You Around. This is from GMY. Brett Goodsite, which is out of Milwaukee, with his great compilation, but again, a lot of Chicago people on it. Bill McKay and Katinka
Klein.
Yeah, Dutch name, Klein. I think.
Yeah, Dutch. Yeah, it has a Dutch J in there. Yeah, but it's right.
Well, the I and the J is their way of making a Y.
Yeah.
I've learned a little bit. I'm slow learning. Path to the Peak. So tell me about these recordings that you flowed me, Bill.
Yeah, there's like, well, just a brief survey, you know, there's the two, I think there's stuff from both Esker and Fountain Fire that were like the, those ones were, all the last five or six, you know, are on Drag City. And so those, including those, and those ones are, you know.
We should tell people Drag City is.
So I essentially sang, played everything on those, you know, there were those kind of records.
Let me tell the listeners, Bill, that Drag City is a great label out of Chicago that puts out pretty adventurous music. Red Crayola's recordings on there. My missing man guitarist, Tom Watson, helped me know Thompson out with those.
Absolutely. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. What's her name? Patina?
We're thinking Thrill Jockey.
No, Thrill Jockey. Yeah. And Tortoise.
You probably have to Drag City people, though.
In fact,
too,
you know, a lot of Tortoise cats moved out here to SoCal, like Jeff Parker. Yeah. In fact, I shared a stage with him 2 weeks ago. Okay.
Great. He's a pal, so that's awesome.
Yeah, and who else? Johnny Herndon moved here. And John McIntyre, yeah. I think, just moved up to Portland, but he was here for a little while. David Gow from Jesus Lives.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Montclair part. So, what was your connect with Drag City?
Well, it was really nice, Mike, because basically I kind of was asked to play a show by my buddy Cooper from the Bitchin' Bajas, which is on Drag City, and it was this was about 2016, I want to say, and he said, "Hey, you want to do a couple shows, you know, with me, like you opening, because we'd become aware of each other, and he'd seen me play." You opening solo, and then you know, Bitchin' Bajas is playing, and then Will Oldham was like the headliner, I guess you call it. But Will did a set, and then he and the Bajas had a record that year that had just come out, so it was like they did a set after as well, the two of them together. So it was a nice four set night, you know. And we did it was Chicago a couple nights in a row, and then it was Detroit, I think, and Cleveland and Buffalo. And, they saw some of the, I think it was, Dan Kretzky, and I think a bunch of the people from Drag City were at the shows, of course. And then they saw me play, and we got talking, you know, and I mentioned I had a recording I was working on. And they said, well, we're interested, you know, to hear it. And so it was real natural. It was a really beautiful moment, you know, just in time. And it kind of just spread from there. And I actually was still finishing it. So as I was getting it together, you know, I was talking with them and then got it all to them. And there was a funny period of kind of waiting to see if they were, you know, interested in the whole shebang, you know, once they had it all. And, so that was a nice, you know, that was one of those golden emails that you get, right? Where it's a, let's do this shit.
Yeah. Get it on. Let's rumble. Yeah, no, but, you know? But actually it was pretty low key, right? Talk about casual people. Billy Prince John.
Bonnie Prince Billy.
Yeah, yeah. He's one of the most kickback dudes I've ever met in the whole fucking scene.
But he's like a quiet smoldering fire. Yeah. But he's, you know, he's fiery.
Oh, like, he's like Jay Maskus inside his head. You know what's going on. Like, but outside, right? Like, he's wearing fucking thongs. In fact, that's why I started wearing fucking sandals at gigs, you know, setas and stuff. I saw him, yeah, in Echo Park or Silver Lake. He was wearing fucking Zoris. And I was like, fuck yeah, why not? And like, cut offs and shit.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yep. You know what, like, though? That's a beautiful story, Bill, because it wasn't like you had to jive somebody. You didn't have to fool anybody. You just did what you do.
Yeah, that's nice you said that, Mike. That's how it really felt. You know, it did. It just felt like it was this meeting, you know, and we just, like, it was music and, you know, it just felt like it was real electric time, too, and, like, the nights were really charged, you know, that we were doing it. So, yeah, it felt very right and real, you know, the way you kind of... you know, you don't even think about it happening anymore.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, and it's been great. They've been,
because
you
can,
you know,
get kind of cynical about the whole fucking showbiz trip, right? But music is
absolutely
music, and it's bitching.
Yeah.
Look, we're at the end of the second hour, November 1, 2021 edition of the Watt for Pedro Show. Special guest, Bill McKay. Hold tight, fire 3. November 1, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show. Thank you.
said, get out of the way. We get along, oh, get astray. Haunt you by truth, captivate my lies. By now you surely know where my sympathies must lie. Haunt you by truth.
Thank you.
start off the third hour, Bill McKay, Nathan Bowles doing Truth. Then Solomon Berger, Untitled 1. Not to be confused with Untitled 2. And then probably the worst band name ever, but I like the tunes. Babes New York City.
Change Babes name, guys. New York City.
Yeah, you got to change the name. Baby No More. And Ray Shin with Sand Tables. And finally, Bill McKay by himself. Dragon Country. Okay. So some of these collabs, like Nathan Bowles, you said this is one you like this.
Yeah, Nathan, that's the most recent one. And then, yeah, the one with Katinka Stir is from 2019. Yeah,
well,
this one.
Well, we had another one that you did with Nathan in the first hour about Late for Your Own Funeral. Yeah,
yeah, right. That's from this latest record, too. Okay. Yeah, okay. That record called Keys. Yeah, the collabs have been really, really different. But
how'd you meet Nate?
Oh, man, Nate, we met through... We met first at when he was playing drums with Steve Gunn, and then we went...
Steve Gunn's going to be on the show soon. Small world.
Oh, great. That's super great. I'm actually meeting him right after I talk with you.
Okay. He's got buddies, well, maybe because of Stevie Boner or something. But, you know, I think it's bitching when, you know, it's community, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you meet him through Steve. Okay. And
no matter what. I met through Steve Gunn. Yeah, and we just, we got going, and what basically set it off really was that we were going to play, we were both trying to get a set at the Cropped Out Festival, which they used to have, and I think last year was 2018. And so almost no space left, and they said, hey, would you guys be amenable to joining a set? And we were both like, oh, that sounds exciting. Let's do that. So we went down there, and we literally got to, you know, we shared some tracks over the email and stuff and links. And then we practiced for about, you know, an hour maybe, and then did our set. Came off great. So it was really gratifying when that happens. So we just had a connection.
Was it scary? Yeah. Jesus, 1 hour of prac right before? Well, I guess if it's right before, then less chance of forgetting shit.
Totally, yeah. I was going to say, yeah. And then, you know, some of situations are you so don't have any other choice. There's nothing else you could have done.
Sure,
so
right,
there's,
right.
It's almost beyond fear. You know, you just put out there and that's it. You just rev the engine and you start going.
I haven't asked you about this, but what about other guitar players? Have any guys helped you out? People you might not even met, but you like their music.
Oh, yeah. Well, I always like to give a shout out first to people like, Eric Susoff was my, main teacher. There was a couple, actually, Joe Negri also. But I spent a little more time with Eric from Pittsburgh, and he was a big influence on me in lots of ways, even beyond music, you know, personally and that kind of way, mentoring across the range in a way. Thinking of people out there that like, just powerful influences kind of. I would say, man, there's so many. I mean, of the giants, you know, Hendrix was, of course, an early one, you know, and, but just to throw things out that come to mind, you know, I love Sonny Chirac and,
I got to meet him once because I played a gig with him.
He was really
kind to me.
Oh, that's great. You guys played. That's amazing.
Well, I didn't get to play with him. We shared the stage.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well.
But while we weren't playing, he spent a lot of time talking with me backstage. He was really kind to me.
Oh, that's really great. That's really great to hear.
And do you know where it was at?
What's that?
I think it was in Rochester.
Mm. Oh, in Rochester. Wow.
Yeah, it was a weird club. Like, it was a weird situation, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was during the riots in the early 90s, the L.A. riots, so they cut the gig out. So, and then they paid us, and I said, fuck, if you're going to give us money, we got to play somewhere. And they found some gay disco called Icons or something. And Eka Mouse, and I got to spend time with Sonny Chirac. Incredible. His heart went after that a couple of years later. Beautiful man, though.
Yeah, wow, fantastic.
What about Bob Fahey? Can I ask you about Bob Fahey?
Oh, about Fahey. Yeah, I mean, although I don't, you know, what's funny is I never had a lot of, I always played, you know, electric at least as much as acoustic. And although some of the records are folk oriented, I never actually listened to Faye Hay. Although what I've heard of him, I've liked, but I shouldn't say never, but I never had his albums and like deeply listened to him, you know.
Okay.
So I think I got an influence of whatever I garner from a similar world was probably like from, you know, like listening to like Lead Belly and Jorma Kaukonen or Kaukonen.
Hot Tuna, Jefferson Airplane. And Lead Belly, he played a 12-string with really high action, I heard.
Oh, I bet you he did, man. Those guys, it was like they were like some kind of warriors, you know, like with the stuff, you know, like.
But, you know, if you ever heard, you know, he wrote House of the Rising Sun. And, the tradition was probably everybody pitched in, right? Everybody was singing songs. But it's upbeat. It's nothing like the Animals version. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah,
so it's upbeat.
Really interesting. It's upbeat.
He was a writer, too. I mean, he wrote that tune In the Pines, you know, and the
all kinds of stuff. I mean, he went to jail for killing, but it was kind of joyous. It's always on the upbeat. It's not this kind of a dirge kind of thing. Look, A Land of Plenty. This sounds like something you did live with Riley Walker.
That's right. Yeah, that was an album we did called Land of Plenty, and that was interesting because it was all original stuff that was just, you know, performed or recorded live.
ဆင်ရပါမယ်ရှင်တောင်းဆိုထားကြတယ်
According to the calculations of the International Monetary Fund, India's economy is more than 3 times as large as was previously estimated. These calculations economy to 6 to America, Japan, China, Germany, and France. An IMF report said places
extend the count.
Thank you.
Watt from Pedro Show. Last music for this edition. Bill McKay and Riley Walker. Land of Plenty. Then Mike Adams at his Honest Weight with I Love a Parade. I think Thor Harris is doing drums there from Austin. Only Now featuring Sheila Bringy. Glory. And then Ernst Carell with Cassette Field Recordings, Thailand, 1993. I think this is from that JMY compilation. And finally, Bill McKay, Scarlet's Return. So tell me about Riley Walker.
Ah, nice, nice. Oh, Riley, man, we met at a party in 2015, not long before we recorded that Land of Plenty album. And, yeah, we just... You know, we just hit it off and started talking. We just heard of each other, you know, through the circle, through the vine. And we just had a kind of a good laugh at this party meeting and just talked about jamming. And then shortly after that, you know, we got together at my house. And, things just kind of rolled from there. You know, we've done the two records together and then another, CD actually was recorded by Brent,
Good sight. It means good time in German.
Yeah, thank you. So there's, you know, and we've
He's a great cat. You know, I collaborate. Yeah. He sent me some drum track, some rhythm track, and I put bass on it. And I collabed with him. Just like that.
Very easy cat.
Yeah, very open. And he said it was a trip for him, too, because he said, man, the track I gave you, I thought it was going to be all heavy and down. And you put, I put a James Jamerson, a happy Motown, you know.
Oh,
that's what I was feeling, but it shows you the gap, right? Now, if he would have gave me the music with instructions, maybe. But he just gives me the music. So that was my honest take. So when Mike Riley gives you some, is it the same kind of trip?
You know, we haven't quite worked that way. Everything we've done has been either, you know, played mostly. We've been, you know, for the Spider Beetlebee album and the other one, we kind of wrote them around a coffee table with the two guitars and that kind of thing. And then we've improvised a lot together. So it was kind of that thing. So I guess the mood was apparent, you know.
You guys are more together. But yeah, this is me getting something from a stranger, right? And I only know it by the music.
Totally. And I think
it was such a trippy thing to read his email saying he thought it was sad and stuff. And then here's my bass line. He says, I got a whole different idea. Now I know how to mix it.
Right.
So you know what? We could have never known, right? Because we didn't really know each other. He's a guest on the show. Open up for collab. Fuck it. Right? Do it.
Yeah.
Why does the dog lick his balls, right? Because he can.
Right.
No other reason. So what do you got going right now, Bill? What's the next musical adventure?
Oh, man. Well, let's see. The main things are that I'm writing stuff for a record down the line not too long from now. It's, you know, that's exciting. I've got some material and different songs I'm looking at. And then I'm doing I've got a couple different, you know, kind of poetry books in the work that are going to come out. They're writings. I almost prefer to just call it writings nowadays because the forms are kind of diverse, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a couple books of writings that are in the works. One's done. What's in the works is the whole apparatus of getting it out there.
Do you have a place on the internet that people can find you?
Yeah, and I put out, and there's a couple things, the coming up, yeah, and stuff's going to be on there. You'll see.
Do you have a website is what I'm asking you, Bill.
Yeah, no, I was going to get to that. Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff on there called, it's just Bill McKay with, you know, with two A's, like you said, like Steve McKay from the...
Right. BILLMACKAY.com. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And I'm keeping it pretty updated. All the links to all the recordings are there.
Oh, that's great, Bill.
Press and everything, you know.
When you get this new record out, will you come back on the show and we can play it and talk about it?
Oh, yeah, I would love to, Mike. It's such a great pleasure and honor to talk with you. And hopefully, I look forward to doing it again.
Yeah. Please keep on keeping on, Bill.
Thanks, brother. You too. You too, Mike. Thanks for having me. And Hope to hear and see you in the same room before long.
Okay. Probably in March with Mike Baguette. I'll be at the Empty Bottle.
Oh, in March. Yes, I saw that. Okay.
So come say hi to Watt.
I'm going to come out. I'm going to say hi. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Bill. People, it's been November 1, 2021. And just Watt Pedro should keep you powder dry.